A Wisconsin state senator who is running for Congress promises to propose a constitutional amendment to ban affirmative action policies in Wisconsin. Republican Senator Glenn Grothman announced his plans, which he proposed in the past without success, in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court decision this week upholding Michigan's constitutional ban on using affirmative action in admissions to Michigan's public universities. Do you support or oppose considering race in college admissions? And what will this ruling mean to the future of affirmative action? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, April 24th. This hour, we will hear from two guests from different perspectives about the implications of this Supreme Court ruling and other affirmative action lawsuits that are in the pipeline, and what this potentially means for the future of affirmative action. And we will welcome your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our first guest is Jim Copland, the director at the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So what? Help us understand what the U.S. Supreme Court did this week. What was the case before? What was the question before it?
Sure. The case was a case called Schuett v. BAM, and Schuett is was the Attorney General of Michigan, and BAM was an acronym for a unwieldy name of a coalition called the Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action, Integration, and Immigration Rights and Fight for Equality by Any Means Necessary. And what they were basically reviewing was the referendum that had been passed by the voters of the state of Michigan saying that race, sex, etc., that there could be no discrimination on those bases by government actors, including the public universities of the state in the state of Michigan. Now, all of the Supreme Court justices, and Elena Kagan was recused based on her role in the Obama administration on this case, but all of the other Supreme Court justices continue to agree that affirmative action is not constitutionally required. But there was a dispute in this case as to whether a majority of the state's voters could eliminate affirmative action at the university systems, which seems a little confusing if it's not required to have affirmative action. And a couple of the justices, Scalia and Thomas, continue to believe that it is prohibited to have any affirmative action types of benefits for racial minorities in university admissions. And a couple of the justices who dissented, Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg joining her, took the same view as the lower court, Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals there, which held that this referendum process was constitutionally suspect. The majority, however, and it was really a plurality. There were multiple opinions in the case, but the six justices who agreed that what Michigan did was permissible basically took the view that the voters can come in there and change this. And the way this got before the court is really based on some precedents, some doctrines, and I can explain those if you'd like.
Well, first, I just want to make sure that we all understand here that the ruling by the majority of the Supreme Court said the voter referendum, the constitutional amendment that was passed in Michigan that prohibits. It prohibits affirmative action policies just at the universities?
Well, that's not what that was what was at issue before the court. That's not what the referendum did. So the referendum was basically a statement saying the government in Michigan, and including universities, but anything else affiliated with the government, may not discriminate on the basis of race or sex. And what that means, what that would do is eliminate so-called affirmative action, which discriminates on the basis of race. In other words, certain traditionally underrepresented minorities are given a benefit in admissions procedures relative to white applicants or Asian applicants or what have you. It's sort of an express benefit in admissions, a plus factor of some sort in admissions. That's what the Supreme Court has said is permissible under a rationale for increasing the diversity of the student body at these state universities. And the Supreme Court has said that in a line of cases going back now 35 years. But what they've also said is that's the diversity rationale is the reason. In other words, there's never been a majority of the Supreme Court that said you can discriminate against whites on behalf of blacks to help black students. What they've said is it's got to be this diversity rationale, which is what created a tension in the law when it came to the rationale here, because the only way you could sort of say what Michigan did might be constitutionally suspect is, well, it disadvantages black applicants, but it's not required. The Supreme Court's never said it's required to have affirmative action, and none of the justices on the current court would take that position.
Yeah, so it's not required to have affirmative action, but in essence, this ruling upholds a ban on considering race in admissions at the University of Michigan. So the University of Michigan will not consider race when considering college applications.
As long as that constitutional amendment that was adopted by a majority of the voters of Michigan is in place, the University of Michigan will not consider race in admissions. The same could be true for any other state, be via by referendum or by a vote of the legislature. So if the state senator, I think you said it was, mm-hmm. in the introduction, were to succeed and get this bill passed in Wisconsin, then the same thing would be true for the University of Wisconsin or any of the other public education entities.
Yeah. And from your analysis, do you think the Supreme Court got it right?
Well, I think the holding is right. And as Justice Scalia said in his concurrence, which means he agreed with the outcome of the case but not the rationale, it's a bit paradoxical to say, as the lower court said and as the two dissenting justices said, the equal protection of the laws, a constitutional provision which is expressly designed to eliminate race discrimination, means that you have to have race discrimination and you can't get rid of it, which was basically what the dissent here was suggesting. Now, the rationale the dissent was using was founded on a line of precedents. There hasn't been a case applying these precedents in over 30 years, but in the earlier days, 1982, the most recent case, there was a case from Seattle where the voters had said, they wanted to eliminate school busing programs. And they did this in a racially neutral way, but the effect of this would be to end the city's integration program in the secondary schools. And the Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that. And it's the political process or political restructuring doctrine. You're punishing minorities by changing the rules of the game. And that line of precedence is what the dissent here was applying. But I think on its face, if the Constitution's about equal protection of the laws, to enact a referendum saying equal protection of the laws means you can't discriminate on the basis of race, it has to be constitutional. And so it's reconciling those lines of precedent that's difficult, and that's where I think the plurality decision, and it's not a majority, it's only three justices that agreed to the logic, is somewhat muddled. And I think either Justice Breyer, who's a Democrat-appointed justice who agreed with the outcome on a fairly limited basis, saying that political restructuring doctrine does not apply to this situation, or Justice Scalia and Thomas, which basically say you can't discriminate on the basis of race. One of those two views viewpoints has to be the legally right outcome, I think.
We are talking about the U.S. Supreme Court ruling issued this week that upheld a Michigan constitutional amendment that bans affirmative action in admissions to the state's public universities. And we're welcoming your reactions and your questions about this. And we're welcoming your thoughts on whether the Supreme Court got this right or whether you think Wisconsin ought to follow suit, as a state senator is going to introduce and also ban affirmative action policies in Wisconsin, or try to with a constitutional amendment. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, April 24th. The Supreme Court upheld the ban on affirmative action at the University of Michigan this week. We are talking with a guest about this decision and what it means for the future of affirmative action in this country, and for that matter in Wisconsin, as a similar constitutional amendment has been proposed here. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do you think of this decision? Do you support it or not, and why or why not? Our first guest this hour is Jim Copland, who is director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And I'm, again, just trying to figure out what this means for the future of affirmative action policies. Jim Copland, aren't there other, there are other lawsuits in the pipeline right now to clear up this muddled situation?
Well, I think the muddle is going to continue somewhat, because what the Supreme Court has been doing, there was an earlier line of cases out of Michigan, one from the law school, one from undergraduate, that went in different directions based on the way the affirmative action programs were working there, and then more recently one out of Texas. I think the Supreme Court is going to continue to have to bring this up on various cases to determine what's permitted and what isn't. And the big picture answer here is that affirmative action is neither permitted, neither prohibited nor required at this point in time, which means that the democratic process can play out, and either through referenda or through acts of the legislature, the voters can implement affirmative action within certain boundaries. They can't have explicit quota systems, for instance, but they can implement affirmative action that is sort of a softer plus standard type of approach, or they can eliminate it entirely and say there's no race discrimination. They can do either of those things, but because there's not a clear bright line rule as saying affirmative action is prohibited or affirmative action in any way it's implemented is permitted, there's going to continue to be lawsuits around the way these cases are around the way the universities are deciding to implement affirmative action.
Yeah, and now the University of Wisconsin officially did not issue a statement, as far as I know, regarding this this ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. But if the University of Wisconsin is considering race as among the criteria in college admissions, they can continue to do so. This ruling doesn't say they have
absolutely.
To stop.
Absolutely.
But if
that law hasn't changed, so they can continue to do so as long as the way they're going about their business is consistent with what the Supreme Court laid down in its recent decisions in applying its principles to Michigan and Texas. So they can't do whatever they want, but as long as they're complying with the Supreme Court's basic frameworks in the more recent cases, but not this last case, they can continue the way they are unless the legislature tells them otherwise.
Yeah, and the legislature may be working on a proposed constitutional amendment that would have to go through two sessions of the legislature and pass a voter referendum if Senator Grothman has his way. But should that happen, this ruling says that would be constitutional to ban
Absolutely.
Affirmative action that way.
Absolutely. I mean, again, it depends on how the amendment is structured, but if it's structured the way the Michigan one was structured and basically says the state of Wisconsin or any of its subsidiaries cannot discriminate on the basis of race, as long as it's something relatively simple and clear like that, then it would pass muster. I mean, you could conceive of amendments that wouldn't pass muster because they would clearly be racially invidious in some way, but if it was a simple no race discrimination provision, then that would be constitutional under yesterday's decision.
Jerry in Madison is with us. Hi, Jerry. What do you think?
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I disagree with the Supreme Court's decision. I think that with voter suppression laws that are in place now and redistricting of districts within the state, that politicians are not held accountable and they can basically do whatever they want to do. So I wholeheartedly disagree. And another comment is that a lot of people think that diversity laws were brought into play strictly to give someone an advantage. I believe that they were also brought into play because the old boy network was in play, that because people were given preferences, whether it be relatives or friends or people that look alike, that's why we still need some of these laws, because that kind of thing is still going on. I'll take your comments off here.
Yeah, along those same lines, here's a Facebook comment from Chris in Wisconsin Dells, who says, "This decision essentially cuts out the poor students. The children of alumni and children of big donors already get preferential treatment."
Well, these are arguments that Justice Sotomayor was making in her dissent. I mean, the problem from a constitutional perspective is on this is that the Supreme Court's always said, you can have every law discriminates in some way, shape, or form, and you can discriminate with a rational, what it calls a rational basis. That's if there's some sort of rational basis, and alumni and donors, there would be a rational basis. That you can discriminate in that fashion, just like you can with any sort of economic regulation, and that's constitutionally permissible. But the strictest scrutiny is for race discrimination for good reason. I mean, the real impetus behind the 14th Amendment was protecting the freed slaves. Now, there's clearly a debate as to whether then does that mean the people that were the freed slaves can't get special permission or special benefits, et cetera, and that's where this sort of plays out. And that's sort of the tension in the law that the justices were trying to walk through here. And the justices come down in different fashions on that. But there is no question that if you were just looking at an alumni preference that the university was adopting, that would disparately help white applicants, because the majority of alumni historically would have been white people based on historic patterns, and so that is correct in terms of the effective outcome here. I would disagree with the sort of poor student point, because the universities could take socioeconomic considerations into account. The question is whether they can take race considerations into account. In other words, there's a difference between Michael Jordan's children or Barack Obama's children and a poor African American applicant, just as would be the case for white people. There'd be poor white people as well as wealthy white people. They could still take account of these socioeconomic factors, even if affirmative action is out there. And there's at least some evidence that in the most elite universities, the principal beneficiaries of affirmative action tend to be middle class and up students of color, more so than poor students of color. Obviously, there's some poor students of color who would get in, but it's because of that diversity rationale and not the benefit of the student applicant rationale that the Supreme Court's adopted.
Yeah.
That the socioeconomic question I think is not really relevant here, other than the fact that, you know, a large donor on the margin, clearly that could be the case.
We have just a minute before our news break, and I just wrap this up for us. You know, we have not heard the end of the debate over affirmative action.
No, I think these cases are going to continue in part because the Supreme Court has preserved these somewhat muddled lines of precedent. I think if the Supreme Court wanted to protect affirmative action programs, the diversity rationale is not a particularly compelling one, and that's why Justice Thomas has objected and said, wait, it's a compelling state interest to have an elite university with a diverse student body. Sounds a bit strange, and it would be cleaner if the Supreme Court said, these things are pretty much permitted if they're helping the descendants of former slaves on the one hand, or these things are outlawed because discriminating on the basis of race is unconstitutional. But they haven't done that. What they've said is the universities can but must not. But can have affirmative action, but they're not required to have affirmative action, which means the
got it, and I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thanks very much for being with us. We just heard from a guest who said essentially that the U.S. Supreme Court was correct in upholding the constitutional ban on affirmative action at the University of Michigan. And we got his take on what this means for the future of the consideration of race in college admissions, and also his take on a proposed Wisconsin constitutional amendment to end affirmative action policies here. Now we'll get a different perspective. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, April 24th. We will continue to welcome your questions and your reactions and wonder if you would be for or against a ban on affirmative action in Wisconsin. As we discussed in our first half hour, just hours after the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Michigan constitutional amendment that bans affirmative action in admissions to Michigan's public universities, a Wisconsin state senator said he would reintroduce legislation to ban affirmative action policies in Wisconsin. Would you be for or against that, and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our next guest is Linda Green, a professor of law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where she specializes in constitutional law, civil procedure, legislation, civil rights, and sports law. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being back with us.
Yes, what a pleasure.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I want to go into detailed legal arguments, what this decision meant, but what is your reaction to what the Supreme Court did this week?
Well, some justices voted in favor of the constitutionality of the Michigan ban on affirmative action, but I think that it's very important to make the distinction that a majority of the justices made is that this decision, in which on different grounds justices say that the Michigan ban was unconstitutional, has nothing to do with the constitutionality of race conditions in higher education. The decision is divided, and I know it might seem technical to mention that, but there is no majority opinion that comes from the Schuette case. There are six justices who say that this provision was constitutional, but there are also six justices on the court who, in this opinion, also affirm that race-conscious admissions in higher education is constitutional, and four of the justices who said that this provision is constitutional specifically affirm the constitutionality of race-conscious admissions, and two of the justices, Sotomayor and Ginsburg, who disagreed with the decision, also say that race-conscious affirmative action is constitutional. And I think that it's such a popular topic, and people have many strongly held and sincerely...
Boy, we're having trouble with our telephone connection with Professor Green. So I don't know. Maybe that's call waiting. Maybe it's something else. I'm not sure. So we're going to try to see that we can maybe reestablish contact and not have those dropouts that we have been hearing. And in the meantime, we have an open line for you to react to this Supreme Court decision that upholds the constitutional amendment that bans affirmative action or race-based or race-conscious affirmative action at the University of Michigan. What does this mean for Wisconsin? We'll talk to Professor Green about that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So I think we've tried to work a little bit of magic there. Let's see, Professor Green. Okay, so I understand there's a lot of complication in this ruling, but in essence, to boil it down to one aspect, the justices voted 6-2, ruling that Michigan voters had the right to change their state constitution in 2006 to prohibit public universities from considering race in admissions. So in essence, it said that constitutional amendment, that ban on affirmative action in Michigan, that is constitutional. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And the point I was making before we were disconnected was that six justices also said in this decision that this decision does not affect the constitutionality of race-conscious admissions in higher education. And that's an important point. People have leaped to the point of view that because the court said that the Michigan voters had the right to do this and that their particular constitutional amendment was not unconstitutional, does not mean that under different circumstances, if another state does that and the court concludes that that is a intent to actually engage in racial discrimination, that that particular ban might be found unconstitutional. This decision does allow the voters to make this choice, but there's a very strong body of law that prevents voters from acting to encourage discrimination. In this particular case, six justices said this particular provision was constitutional, but there are some circumstances in which voters have attempted to outlaw certain non-discrimination laws, and the Supreme Court has struck those down. So I think 2 points, yes, the Michigan ban was, six justices did find it constitutional. The second point from the same opinion is that race-conscious admissions in higher education continues to be constitutional.
Right. So if in Wisconsin, State Senator Glenn Grothman, who says he's going to reintroduce his proposed constitutional amendment to end affirmative action policies in Wisconsin, if that constitutional amendment and referendum question were worded the same way as Michigan's, it could be found constitutional. But you're saying
it could be found constitutional, and depending on the motivation, the rationale for it, it might be found unconstitutional. So this is on a case-by-case basis.
get that these measures, that the Supreme Court or other courts would consider these measures. Another important point to keep in mind is that many of the major universities, all of the major universities, if I may speak broadly, are federal contractors. They receive federal financial assistance, and also they are federal contractors. And all federal contractors have an obligation to engage in race-conscious affirmative action, that is pursuant to an executive order, the constitutionality of which is not in question. And the all of these bans on affirmative action, so for example, California Proposition 209, the Michigan Constitutional Amendment, they do not affect the obligation of federal contractors, including the University of Wisconsin, to adhere to affirmative action in their employment. And so affirmative action is not precluded by these bans. Only that affirmative action, which is not required by the federal government, could be banned. Just, Joy, just one more point I think it's important, and that is that the universities continue to be responsible to make sure that all students who are eligible to attend the university are not prevented from doing so by rules or procedures that thwart their admission. And most boards of higher education are very concerned about the preparation of the workforce. And so even if there is no affirmative action, there is still an obligation, universities still have an obligation to abide by non-discrimination, and that means being vigilant to ensure that all eligible students have a fair chance at admission.
Yeah. There's another possible lawsuit underway. A Virginia-based group that was behind another case that went before the U.S. Supreme Court a few weeks ago began seeking applicants at UW-Madison, Harvard, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, who feel that they were denied admission because of race. What do you know about this effort and what this might mean for UW-Madison or the University of Wisconsin?
Well, I don't know about that effort, but there are a number of organizations that do actively seek potential plaintiffs in such lawsuits, and it depends on what the procedures are and how those procedures work. The Supreme Court has approved procedures which take into account the entire record of students and which don't have hard and fast numerical guidelines. And so you'd have to look at each university involved and also at each student who might want to be a potential plaintiff. I think there are probably people here in Wisconsin who deal day-to-day with admissions who could give you a better answer to what this might mean. But we expect to see many lawsuits on these issues. But certainly perhaps SUET, if people don't necessarily read the opinion but take the headlines, one could conclude that this is a blow to affirmative action. Certainly those who supported the ban might consider it a blow to affirmative action, but I would reiterate that six justices on the Supreme Court affirmed their support for race-conscious affirmative action within constitutional limits, and most people expect that Justice Kagan, who could not participate in this lawsuit because of her prior service as Solicitor General, will also be a seventh vote in favor of race constitutional affirmative action.
We are talking with Linda Green, Professor of Law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about the ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court this week regarding affirmative action at the University of Michigan. It upheld Michigan's affirmative action ban, but it did not ban affirmative action. So we welcome your questions, your reactions, your viewpoints on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is now 9 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, April 24th. We are talking about the future of affirmative action in the wake of a U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding the affirmative action ban at the University of Michigan and a proposed constitutional amendment in Wisconsin that would also ban affirmative action. A state senator Glenn Grothman says he's going to reintroduce this measure in wake of the Supreme Court decision this week. So what do you think? What questions do you have? Would you support a similar effort in Wisconsin, a voter referendum to ban the consideration of race in the admissions at the University of Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Brad in Jefferson. Hello, Brad.
Morning. I'm wondering how much of this has to do with the money in Michigan. The DeVos Republican machine, which is also heading up the American Federation for Children, along with the Walmart money and the Bradley Foundation and others, to kind of destroy our schools, which will make them possibly separate but very unequal, with very little standards, and also the American Legislative Exchange Council. I'm thinking maybe this is just another wedge issue that they want to use to divide the people. Thank you.
I'm not sure, Professor Green, if you have a reaction to that, but maybe you can talk a little bit about what's behind this effort by some, including the voters in Michigan, to stop race-conscious considerations in college admissions.
I would just react to a small part of what the caller said, and that is his concern with the quality of education at the K-12 level. More and more universities are understanding the importance of whatever support they can give for two school systems, access to early bridge programs at universities, focusing in on talented children who may be at risk because they don't have experience with college in their families, or perhaps they speak a second language. So I think that a positive from the comment the caller makes is how important it is to focus on the preparation of children for school, and also to make sure that some of those children who might be at risk, they might be very, very talented, but they might not have those opportunities in their school systems. And what would be really fantastic would be that if we could provide more support for universities like the University of Wisconsin to become more involved in supporting public schools. The University of Wisconsin is already doing that with its outstanding School of Education. But if we think more about preparation, that's one angle. The other issue which your producer raised with me is some alternatives to race-based a partially race-based admission or race-conscious admission. It's not really based on race. It's just that you're taking a look at how race may have affected the circumstances of some students. More and more universities are focusing on first-generation students and what we might do to prepare them, recognizing that many students, a growing number of students, may have English as their second language, and we need to do everything we can to prepare them. So there's two angles. One, to be sure that we don't close our eyes to the way in which race allocates opportunities in the country. And the second is to focus on preparing as many young people as possible, especially those who may be at risk, to get that higher education, which more and more is essential to long-term occupational success.
There was a news story that said the African-American enrollment students went down 30% in Ann Arbor, Michigan, since this ban has been in place.
And that's been the case around the country. Sonia Sotomayor's opinion focuses on that gap, and she also does a really interesting few paragraphs on the history of race and the University of Michigan, documenting that the University of Michigan from 1868 to 1935 only had 35 students at the university. And by, she said by 1966, there were 400 students, 400 minority students out of 32,000 students, less than 1%. And she also recounted that at the law school, that during the 60s, the law school had only 9 black graduates of 3,041. That's less than 0.3%. And so it's really important to really focus in on how some of these conversations about affirmative action should really be about non-discrimination. What are we doing to make sure that the pathway to higher education is open to all? Yeah. And that's one of the things that focusing in on how we're doing with racial disparity is that focus makes an important contribution to ensuring that we're not engaging in discrimination or excluding students who are very well qualified to study at our great universities.
Yeah. Well, we just have a minute or so to go. What are your thoughts on the future of affirmative action policies in Wisconsin in particular?
Wisconsin has, for several decades now, had a strong commitment to access to higher education for all students. And the universities that make up the system, as well as the system, have been paying close attention to the disparities between the numbers of minority students who qualify for admission to the University of Wisconsin and who yet do not find their way to the University of Wisconsin. And so focusing on educating all the students who we need to be a strong state so that our businesses have great workers is really what's important. And I don't think that we should get caught in a pro or anti-affirmative action debate. Let's talk about access to higher education for as many students in Wisconsin who qualify for that precious opportunity.
Well, that's a good spot to leave it for now. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Linda Green, a professor of law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.